My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock. And I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, the thing is, I want to learn. And as it turns out, I work with people who know a lot about classical music. Every week on this show, one of my coworkers will give me a homework assignment, a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the Classical Classroom. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and today my instructor is going to be Tracy Jacobson, who is the bassoonist for the ensemble Windsink.
Hello. I wouldn't go so far as to say instructor today.
Yeah? No?
But yes, I'm the bassoonist in Windsink. Uh-huh. We're a chamber group and essentially spend our lives on the road playing wind quintet concerts in exciting places.
Yeah, didn't you tell me that you're only here like a day a month or something?
It certainly feels like that. Yeah, we're on the road, I would say about half the year.
Wow, so that's crazy.
Really, really cool.
And this is just going and playing at different venues? I mean, are you going to, like, concert halls? Are you going to clubs? Like, where are
you
going?
Gosh, I mean, yes. Yes, all of the above. I mean, just in the next few months, we're hitting up all of the coasts.
Yeah.
And Wyoming, that kind of is between them. We're playing in concert halls. We're playing in national parks. We're playing... That's going to be really cool, actually.
National parks? Like,
yeah.
Tell me more about that. Like,
we're headed to Wyoming next week, actually. And we're playing in the Grand Teton National Forest.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That
so
is
cool.
Awesome.
But, you know, it's like as awesome as a musician's job can get.
Wow.
Getting to play all these, like, amazing concerts in beautiful, wonderful places.
And how long have you guys been together?
We're going on our fifth season.
Wow.
So it's been a long time. It hasn't always been like this. Mm-hmm. You know, we started when we were in school.
At Rice University, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Where we toured for 7 days of the
year. Wow. You've come a long way.
Yeah.
That's so great. And I noticed on the website that you guys were kind of from all over the country and then just decided to plant yourselves in Houston after Rice and... stick together?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Houston is such a wonderful town to try new things and to... There's such an appreciation for the arts, and the radio station has been incredible for us. And so...
Nice.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Hey,
you guys
welcome.
Are great.
We try.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, well, today we'll be talking about Debussy, but you... or wait, I'm already butchering the name. Debussy? I don't know.
Beautiful.
I'm from Texas. Debussy. And you had me listen primarily to a pianist named Pascal Roget.
Right.
Or say it like you say
in
it.
In French. Pascal Roget.
Pascal Roge. So you assigned me a lot of piano music today, and you were telling me that as a professional musician who's been through school and all of that, that you have to constantly educate yourself. Basically, you're designing your own continued education, and you decided to challenge yourself by listening to piano music, which apparently is not really your thing.
Yeah.
And so this is what you have brought to me today, so.
Yeah. Well, it's basically like you said, I find that after finishing school, when you're constantly inundated with new music and learning about everything about a composer and studying and getting to know different instrumentalists and their music, it's just part of what you do. And you don't necessarily think about when you leave what type of a void that leaves. You have to really seek out new things or you don't really come across them. So for me, piano music was never really something I was very interested in. I'm a wind player.
Right.
I was always really fascinated by breath and how that creates a phrase, and kind of solo instruments. Mm-hmm. And the piano was always an accompaniment instrument for me,
mm-hmm.
in the way I conceptualized the instrument. And but, you know, many people feel very differently than that, and many smart people that I respect. So I decided that I wanted to learn more, mm-hmm. about this music. And actually, this has been an excellent excuse for me to really delve into Debussy's world. So I guess we'll start with an early work.
Okay.
It's one of his earliest works, and he, by the end of his career, was saying he didn't even really like it that much anymore. But this is the Clair de Lune, very famous piece from, mm-hmm. the suite Bergamasque. Let's listen to it.
Okay. So instantly recognizable.
When I was researching this piece, beyond just, you know, listening to it,
mm-hmm.
the thing that was most interesting to me in learning about Debussy and his inspiration for music,
mm-hmm.
was that, you know, the title, Clair de Lune, or Moonlight, isn't actually referring to moonlight. I mean, it is, indirectly. But it's the title of a work by Paul Verlaine, and he's actually referencing another work entirely.
Poet.
Yeah. And that was kind of the big thing that got me to appreciate Debussy.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he's a musician and a composer of a different species. He isn't writing exciting storytelling music. He's really painting a picture with the music.
That is exactly what I wrote in my notes, that it like listening to this music was sort of like listening to a painting.
Yeah.
In a way.
And Debussy would have been very happy to hear that.
Well, before you continue talking about the piece, talk a little bit about him as a person. When did he live? Where did he live? Etc.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a Parisian to the core.
Mm.
And really lived like that typical bohemian lifestyle that you imagine. And surrounded by Impressionism.
Mm-hmm.
Although he also wouldn't want to be labeled that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the parallel literary movement, Symbolism. Mm. And it's interesting, over the course of his life, his style changed a lot. He was always, you know, in his studies, trying to be a rebel.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was not the style of the day. He pioneered new harmonies, and it's really... he had a different concept of music. And actually, I think when I was a student and we were in music history class, we'd identify composers based on like a selection that was played for us. And the way I would recognize Debussy, this is so embarrassing, I would recognize Debussy, was, is it the most boring piece of music I've ever heard? Because, you know, the French music, Debussy, Ravel, it can sound very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, Debussy was just always a little more boring. But that's boring is the wrong word. It's less of a story. It's less in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to be kind of mature to appreciate it.
It kind of is what it is. You know, it seems very... I don't know if you can actually say this about French piano music, but it seems very unpretentious, you know? I immediately just sort of warm to it because it's so, I don't know, it's kind of inviting,
yeah,
in a way.
I think you can really say that about Roger's playing.
dude can play.
Yeah. Each note is like a bell, and it's just a chorus of bells that work together beautifully. It's not, he doesn't try and make a line where there isn't one. And it's just, oh, so beautiful.
It's good stuff. That was Claire de Lune. Sort of sampling of his earliest work.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's beautiful, it's melodic. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's easy listening, but it's easy listening.
It's easy to listen.
It's easy to listen to. Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, this. I mean, I think if I heard it in an elevator, I would actually be moved. You know,
right?
But not it's not by the elevator. That
it's substantial music.
Yeah,
but it's just, you know, it's not difficult to listen to at all.
Mm-hmm.
In music, we talk about like consonants and dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
Consonance is when the notes sound like they go together.
Mm-hmm.
Dissonance is the opposite, when it's they kind of rub against each other.
Yeah,
and moving forward, you know, let's go 20 years forward in Debussy's life.
Okay.
To the preludes. And he starts incorporating more and more dissonance in his music. Subtly. It doesn't sound dissonant. But if you think about, we can talk about, you know, Impressionism, like the famous Monet. When you look at the painting from far away, you see a beautiful picture. But up close, there's a lot of discord.
Right.
And you can kind of look at this next selection as involving kind of that and bigger washes of ideas rather than kind of more of a melody line. Right from the beginning, he's using a different harmonic language. It's more, you probably hear it as being more jazzy.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting that you said that. You told me in your instructions before our lesson today to pay attention to the titles of the songs. So, Dancers of Delphi. So, interesting title.
This particular movement was actually, I guess, the general accepted interpretation is it was actually written after a sculpture of a female, I guess, Delphic dancer in the Louvre that Debussy had seen.
Okay.
And if you listen to it, it doesn't necessarily read as like a light female dancer.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of it as like a female dancer column, you know, it's grounded.
Yeah.
But still, she's moving gracefully, you know.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the lightness of the touch on the keys. I don't know. Piano is not somewhere I'm really trained, but just based on what I hear.
Have you ever played any piano? I mean, like...
Oh, no.
Like, okay.
In school, they have you do four semesters.
What's another movement in the preludes
that
we could hear?
Let's go for Des pas sur la neige.
Oh, footsteps in the snow. I like that one.
I love this. It's so... I mean, speaking about an image that just sticks with you.
But it reminded me this whole thing because I was paying close attention to the titles. It reminded me there's this recording called American Haikus where Jack Kerouac is reading haikus, and Zoot Sims and Al Cohn, these jazz saxophone guys, are playing basically the music interpretation of every haiku that he says. And there's one that that's about like his cat stepping in the snow or something like that.
Yeah.
And like I immediately thought of that.
In the morning frost, the cats step slowly.
And it's very similar actually to all of these pieces because their names are so are the music really, I don't know, there's a correlation between the music and the names.
Oh yeah,
very
definitely.
Very much so.
The thing about this particular movement that struck me is when you listen to it, you're not listening to like a person or something stepping in the snow. Mm-hmm. You're actually listening to the footprints. You know, it's like it's so static, mm-hmm. but in that stasis, it's so charged. Uh-huh. You know, it's really incredible.
That's a really interesting observation, that it's static. I mean, it's just sort of focused on that one thing.
That one moment.
Like a painting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It also reminded me a little bit of some Thelonious Monk that I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Debussy is, what you know we study in school is that he's kind of the father, grandfather of jazz.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more about that. That's pretty cool. I really like jazz.
Yeah. Well, you know, the harmonies and the way that he conceptualized harmony are the origins of what became jazz harmony. And everyone gave him a hard time about it.
You know. It's like you're the one who started
like,
this
what
mess.
What are you doing with this strange music? But yeah, it's he used it because he was trying to, I guess, show beauty in discord. And I think that also has to do kind of with the historical context. I want to listen to one more prelude. I think they're all just so fantastic.
They really are.
But I want to listen to La Cathédrale. Oh, I can't read my writing.
Which means...
Let's take that one out.
No, that's totally staying in.
No. I actually can't see what I wrote. The Submerged Cathedral.
Yeah. Which is a very cool title,
by
the way.
Yeah. It's not showing a cathedral, it's actually showing the reflection. And when you think about the paintings of that period, water was a big theme.
Right.
Particularly of Monet.
Mm-hmm. The lilies.
Yeah. And there's actually, Monet had a painting that was a cathedral reflection. But if you listen...
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly the title of the piece. Mm-hmm. Like, you can just see it when you're listening. I was just actually in France, and I went to one of the more famous cathedrals at the Mont Saint-Michel. Mm-hmm. Well, it's, like, right on the English Channel, actually. And it was so cold, and there were, like, little bits of snow everywhere. But it was really almost too cold to snow. And there's water all around. It's kind of on an island. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of this so exactly. it's amazing that he could capture an image so well. There's a really great Debussy quote, actually. I wrote it down. He said, "There's more to be gained by watching the sun rise than listening to the Pastoral Symphony." That's referencing, you know, the most famous piece by Beethoven. And you get from him, like, he's just trying new things, you know. He's trying to branch out from the musical tradition, which really was about the music, you know. It wasn't about other art forms and art in general. It was really just about the music.
So he was really into connecting music and art, it seems.
Oh, definitely.
Like that it's almost as if it's a reflection of a reflection. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's his reflection upon someone else's reflection.
Exactly.
You know?
And, I mean, add three or four more reflections, and that's probably what he was going for.
Yeah, that, which is really cool. I mean, it's such a great idea because, I mean, I've been to museums or to, to listen to music many times, and you just, you know, you're so sort of emotionally moved, and then to, you know, take that emotion and turn it into this lovely music, like, what a great, you know, conceptual thing to do. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean... He's a philosopher, you know? Like, he's writing about reason and versus feelings, you know?
Yeah.
And he's writing about uncertainty mm-hmm. and, like, finding order in uncertainty.
Huh.
And this is so what's going on in the world, you know? And he just brought it to a musical level.
Yeah.
And I think that was... kind of his goal, is he wanted to be thought of on that level, you know. He was so, I guess, so French that he was all about, I guess, this aesthetic of using the piano to create a picture, to explore these ideas. Because Wagner was happening at exactly the same time.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
I know, it's so crazy. And Debussy actually had listened to a lot of Wagner, and a lot of his music made references to it in some smaller ways.
Hmm.
But by the end of his life, he, like most of France, I could say all of France, was very anti-German. So that brings us very well into our last piece.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about, I don't know if you know anything about, like, the German romanticism, like a Viking lady hat and, like,
yeah.
really sustained lines and all that. I mean, Wagner is much more than that, don't get me wrong. But that type of aesthetic, being big and being kind of organized and sweeping
epic.
And epic. Epic is a great word. Debussy, particularly at the end of his life, wanted nothing to do with that. He felt that it was really important for us to get back to the French aesthetic of kind of the simplicity and beauty of that. So I had you listen to the elegy.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll hear, even in contrast to the preludes, it's even more dissonant. You'll hear kind of even more uncertainty. But the interesting thing, I think, is to find where the moments of clarity and light are in it. And I don't know if you had that experience when you were listening to it. But most harmonically, it's much more complicated. But I think emotionally, it speaks even stronger.
It really is so much more dissonant. That's crazy.
And now here's the really interesting thing. If you go back and listen to some of his early works, right now, just flash to it. And it's so simple.
Wow. What a contrast.
Right? But I bet when you first listened to this, it didn't necessarily seem so melodic. So cool though, right?
It's such a contrast. You know, it reminds me of different painters that, you know, I've seen the progression of their work, like Mark Rothko. I mean, his early stuff is so detailed and more realistic, and then you see his plainer paintings right. At the end of his life, everything is just this sort
the chapel.
Of blur. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting for me to be listening to this type of music because, as I mentioned, it's like never been something that I've cared about, never something that's been on my radar. And I think it's been a great lesson for me because, you know, sometimes I probably listened to this stuff when I was like 14. Uh-huh. Like, how could a 14-year-old appreciate that? But I always had this, like, I guess mental block, you know, I put forth, I don't like Debussy. And then I like labeled that in my mind. And it was just that I didn't like it at that time. I didn't like it in that moment. But all you need is kind of something to break that down.
It's true.
To develop a whole new appreciation for something.
That happened to me with Justin Timberlake.
Didn't that happen to all of us with Justin Timberlake?
It kind of did. It's like, what happened?
So this last piece that I want us to talk about, I actually, it was my gateway into this.
Your gateway drug. Watch out, kids.
But it was actually like this incredible experience for me because it was only about a month ago. I was on one of my rare vacations and I was up in New England and it was during a heat wave. So it was just like ridiculously hot, no air conditioning. And we had like a bottle of wine, like a cold rosé, and there was no fan either. So it was just like sticky and heavy, and some cheese. And then this next piece, La Plus Quillante, just came on. And it all of a sudden just like spoke to me. So I think I'll probably always imagine it that way. But
being hot and drunk and eating cheese.
But I think that's really what this particular piece is about. It's, you know, the title, like More Than Slow.
It's, oh, yeah. Okay, that's cool. I didn't know that's what that meant.
And it's kind of a joke, you know. And it was probably one of Debussy's most popular pieces. It's very accessible. But it's like about that, you know. I could just see Debussy in Paris with his cronies and like it's very hot, you know, drinking a rosé, eating cheese and talking about philosophy or something.
Talking about how Wagner sucks.
So just kind of as a little fun game, we have two recordings of this. Okay. And now we've been listening to Pascal Roger for the whole podcast. And I've slipped in another recording. And I guess we'll play a little bit of both of them.
Okay.
And let's see if you can tell the difference just based on listening to the style of, you know, the pianist that we've already heard and see if you identify a new style or if it sounds the same.
Okay. This is a pop quiz.
Pop quiz.
Okay, this one is definitely Roger.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like I thought the other one was smooth until I started hearing this one.
Right?
Yeah. So the other one was Arthur Rubinstein?
Right, right.
Okay.
And he's a great pianist, you know.
Yeah.
He's wonderful.
Yeah.
But I think Roger just has this really unique understanding of Debussy's music.
I have a question that just popped into my head. So we're listening to all of these, you know, preludes. I can't say that word for some reason. And individual pieces. Did Debussy ever write like a symphony or anything
we're
like that?
We're only talking about his piano music.
Oh.
Debussy has a whole wealth of other music.
What?
Yeah. You know, like a saxophone sonata. And he wrote orchestral music. He has an opera.
Okay.
And it's all great stuff, you know. And actually, it's not that I, before this month, didn't listen to Debussy. It was that I didn't listen to his piano music.
To the piano music. Okay, gotcha.
Because when you add in wind instruments, it becomes, at least for me, more accessible to me. But it was the piano music that I didn't get.
Yeah.
And, you know, no expert still. But, like, how can you not love this? You know?
It's really great. How do you think, now that you've, you know, you've finally gotten into this piano music that you once hated,
you know, so long ago,
how do you think that this is going to inform your playing as a bassoonist?
Well, I think it certainly will inform the need for other instruments and other types of music. Because so little of this is applicable at all to the bassoon. I can always try and emulate some of the colors. But you know, that's probably why I didn't like it that much initially. Because I was listening to this type of music to make my bassoon playing better.
Right.
To see what I could take away from it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the moral of the story is you kind of can't. Certainly not in any sort of meaningful or successful way. You know.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably why I was so frustrated in conservatory too. Because I was really trying to just get really good at the bassoon. And you know,
you didn't have room for this kind of music yet in your musical brain, you know?
No, not at all. But now I do.
Yeah.
And now that I have room for it, I'm like, come on in.
Come on to Debussy. Well, this really has been an awesome lesson, and I think I may
call it a discovery together.
A discovery together.
I hardly consider myself a teacher in this.
You taught me so much today. And you definitely turned me on to some music that I am going to go after we finish talking and burn onto a CD so that I can take it into my car and listen to it.
If you turn it up really, really high, and you listen to this stuff in the car, it's great.
And maybe it will keep me from yelling at other drivers.
It's very calming. See beautiful impressionist pictures.
Yeah.
It's funny because the music makes you even speak in like a museum voice.
Oh my god, you're right.
Yeah.
It totally does make you speak in a museum voice.
Like, I just wanted to speak softly. I noticed
that
too.
I was actually getting kind of afraid mid-conversation that we wouldn't, our levels wouldn't be right. high enough.
Because we're talking like this. Because you're going through an exhibit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's very strange to be, like, you know, walking through a, like, just imagine yourself in, like, a fancy exhibit and, like, screaming about, not screaming, but speaking at full voice or
this painting
saying
is so
something, like, really uneducated or something. It just makes you feel really self-conscious.
Uh-huh. Well, Tracy, this really has been fun, and I hope you come back again.
And maybe I'll talk about what I actually know next time.
I liked you talking about what you didn't know. It made me feel less like a dumbass. Everybody, thanks for tuning into the Classical Classroom. If you have any questions that you would like addressed in one of our episodes, please send me an email at dclay@classical917.org. Thanks a lot for listening, and we will catch you next time.